I also began to worry why I hadn't been told to take, or been given any, pills like I was taking at the school. Before leaving my training at NSA, Captain White had told me that I would not need the pills anymore until I was told to start taking them later. Maybe this was why I was not receiving any comms yet. Regardless of the reason, I was becoming anxious to use this ability I had worked so hard to discover and strengthen. Enter Spock. Time marched on and still no comms. Within 6 weeks of beginning my training for my normal duties, I was officially certified to operate my station without the presence of my trainer. It wasn't too long after that I finally received my first operational comm. I am not sure if it was intentional or not, but I received my first comm the night of my first shift as a newly certified crew member. I got to the site a bit early since this was my first night without someone supervising me. I wanted to make sure I did everything correctly. My crew partner showed up and we authenticated properly with security personnel in order to open the C-van for the 12-hour shift ahead of us. As we made our way into the C-van, I had just silenced the alarm box and started to power up my equipment when I intuitively received the message, "Prepare for information string." I was so startled I uttered some unintelligible noise, then followed that with an audible wait. My crew partner asked me what he was to wait for. "Oh, sorry, just talking to myself," I said automatically, not wanting him to think I was crazy. I wasn't quite sure what to do about the impending comm since my computer was not up and running yet. It took a certain amount of time for the computer to boot and I had at least 2 or 3 minutes to wait still. At the same time I had audibly said wait, I had also sent back a comm saying wait. I realized this only after I mentally replayed the situation later. I had never vocalized any comm before. I never did it again either. But the comm took me by such surprise that my auditory facilities were affected along with my intuitive abilities. I felt so out of sorts. Even though the act of intuitively communicating was something I could do, the psychological ramifications of realizing you re-communicating with a non-human entity takes a little getting used to, as you might imagine. They seemed to have listened since I didn't receive anything until my computer was up. Waiting for my computer to boot was the absolute longest 3 minutes of my entire life. I was about to have a two-way communication with an alien. Up until this moment it had all been motions I was going through because someone told me I had to. Now, all the training, the nights laying in bed awake wondering what it would be like to actually communicate, all of it was coming together. It was actually happening. This wasn't a spectator sport anymore. I was the quarterback, receiver and the fan in the bleacher, all rolled into one. After the computer finished booting, I started to get butterflies in my stomach and I began to wonder if my abilities were good enough to do the job correctly. 100 things were going through my mind when I hit the right mouse button and the F10 key as I had been instructed many times to do. After I opened the window and typed in my password, I intuitively sent a ready message and waited to receive the first of what would be hundreds of comms. I began to type in the blank window that I had just opened. My crew member was doing his own tasks on his computer, so I didn't have to be concerned about whether he was going to start asking questions. I was thankful for that. During this first assignment as a mission ready, my comms were very uneventful and mundane. I had no idea the meaning of what I was typing. After the first month of receiving comms, it became very routine and no longer held the level of mystique to me that it did during that first month. A comm would begin with what I called the preamble. The preamble consisted of the same sequence of numbers that differentiated very little. I would always receive a 3-digit number first, which was the number that identified me to whoever the information was going to when I sent out my report. This number was 118. There would be timed pauses between each phrase or expression. The pause was always the same. I never got the stopwatch out, but the rhythm of it was constant, so it was evident it was the same all the time. The pause was probably about 3 seconds. Except for the pause between the comm that would tell me to prepare for information string and the time the information string would begin. This pause would be as long as it would take me to prepare to receive the comm. After the number 118 would be passed, another string of numbers would usually follow. This string would be a 5-digit number that varied but often was repeated in other messages. I called this the zip code, because it had 5 digits, not because it related to a location necessarily. After these 8 numbers, however, there was no rhyme or reason to the CUMs most of the time. A sample CUM at this point would have looked similar to this: 118/67555/99550043/47477899055/9400/. The CUMs would simply be a series of numbers separated by a character. This was the way I was taught to separate CUM sections while in school. Anytime there was a pause, I would place the character in between phrases. Sometimes I could pick out obvious things like latitude and longitude. When I first noticed lat, longs being communicated, I wanted to look them up on a map, but we didn't have detailed maps in our C-van and I was terrified of writing anything down and taking it with me. I soon lost motivation to look up the locations. I got to the point, finally, of taking most things for granted. It became a very boring task to receive these CUMs and type them in this blank window. It certainly wasn't very challenging and I lost all interest in it simply because it was only a one-way communication for all intents and purposes. Once in a while I would send back a CUM saying repeat last phrase or something like that. But most of the time, it was a one-way street and not an exciting job. After some time had passed since that first CUM, I took the liberty of naming the grey contact I communicated with Spock. My best friend had always been a big Star Trek fan and it seemed a befitting name. It was also because I perceived a great deal of logical structure in his communications. It felt a bit sad to come up with such a deliciously ironic name as Spock and have no opportunity to share the humor of it with anyone. My suspicions about the pills I had been taking at the PPD school proved justified midway through my tour at this new assignment. Around April of 1993, about 5 months after I had arrived this new base, Captain Stanley came into the C-van while I was on duty and asked my crew member to step out for a moment. I began to get nervous since the captain had not said one word to me in private since our first PPD meeting. Was I doing something wrong in my CUMs? Were they correct? These were the types of questions running through my mind as I waited for my crew partner to step out of the van. The captain sat down in the seat vacated by my partner. He reached into his pocket and brought out a shiny gray bottle. "Sergeant Sherman, do you remember taking some pills while you were at school?" the captain asked as he placed the bottle on the counter in front of me. "Yes, sir. I took 2 tablets every day I attended school. I was wondering if I was ever going to take them again." "Well, that's what these are. We need you to start taking them again until further notice." I started to get a little more bold in my questioning, especially since I hadn't had any questions answered for a long time. "What are they, Captain?" I asked. "I actually have no idea, Sergeant Sherman. I've just been instructed to have you start taking these again." Pushing further, I continued on. "Do you take them? I can't answer any questions about the pills, Sergeant Sherman. I know, you're naturally curious. But I honestly cannot talk about them anymore. Take 2 every shift. You're to keep them in your safe drawer here in the C-van. I know you know better, but I have to say it anyway. Don't try to take them from the site. It's important that you take them as instructed. I know this sounds heavy-handed, but we'll know if you haven't taken even one, so please follow the instructions to the letter." With that, he left the van. What in the world were in these things anyway? I never felt any abnormal physical effects while taking them, but I was curious what they were and what effect they had on my abilities. I was sitting there looking at them when my crew partner came back into the van. I was beyond caring whether he asked any questions. At that very moment I was very bitter at PPD and the world. It was the same feeling I had felt in the past and would continue to feel. It was as though I had no control over my own life. It seemed everything I did was dictated by someone else. Of course, in the military this was not uncommon. But this situation went deeper. My partner did the obvious, he asked what the bottle was for. I told him they were for headaches. As far as I was concerned at that particular moment, that was the truth. As he shrugged and turned to his computer, I popped two of the pills into my mouth and swallowed dryly. I had no choice. I had to bark when the master said speak. My tour at this base was quick as I was only there for about 11 months. But the end was the most exciting part. About 3 months before I was to leave, I had an unusual come with Spock. It started out like all the rest, with the normal preamble and subsequent, mostly numerical information. Because all the comms were from 30 seconds to 45 seconds long, I could tell the comm was coming to a close when I suddenly tripped and stepped up in my comm level. This is very difficult to describe, but the closest analogy I can find is what happens when you take too much mouthpiece into your mouth while playing a reed instrument. The beautiful sound you may have been making a moment before is quite suddenly replaced with a screeching sound. Although there is no sound associated with comms, it is the closest I can come to describing what happened. Spock immediately picked up on my accidental mental leap and met me on this other level. I was startled because I didn't even know this other level existed prior. Spock immediately asked if I had intentionally changed planes. I answered no and told him that I didn't even know this plane existed. I use the word plane in this explanation because I can't think of another alternative to how Spock referred to it. If Spock and I had been communicating vocally, I would have asked what was meant by that word. When you intuitively communicate, though, the rules are not the same. You understand things that otherwise make no sense in linguistic terms. Note, I have no choice but to write the contents of the comms with my alien contacts in a conversational format, like two humans talking. The actual comms were much more rich in texture and informational in content, but in ways I am unable to convey to the reader on paper. Spock immediately signed off and I was left wondering what had just happened. I knew from Spock's response that this event was totally unexpected not only by me but also by him. That night in bed, I replayed in my mind what had happened. I was trying to figure out what might have occurred differently that precipitated this unusual turn of events. I had been getting much better and quicker at interpreting the data. Did my proficiency have anything to do with this moving to a higher plane? I was just getting used to the intangible nature of my abilities and this hits me from left field. My next come after the higher plane event came 2 or 3 days later. I gave the go-ahead and Spock sent the routine preamble and continued with the come. I was nervous, wondering if he would refer to what had happened. I was somewhat concerned that it was perhaps an unauthorized come. Of course, I had no idea if there was even such thing as an unauthorized come. If there was, I was concerned I had initiated one. Nothing happened. The come ended as usual and that was it. Now I started to wonder why he hadn't addressed it. I actually began to wish he had so I could find out more about why it happened. I thought about trying to do it again, but I was hesitant, still unsure as to whether communicating on this other plane was something I was supposed to be doing. But I knew that if Spock wasn't going to refer to it, sooner or later curiosity would get the better of me and I would breach the subject on my own. A few more comms went by without Spock referring to it. I was getting impatient and my curiosity was becoming overwhelming. It was 2 weeks after the plane-changing event that I finally got up enough nerve to try it again. I received the normal comm prepare for information string. Conveniently, my partner had gone out of the van to use the restroom. Short lapses in security were tolerated for such urgencies. I sent back the go-ahead and began to type the incoming comm in the blank screen. I knew I had mere seconds to decide whether I was going to try to change planes again. I knew the comm was coming to an end, so I started to gather up the nerve. As soon as Spock had finished and I sensed he was terminating comms, I lunged forward with what I thought would duplicate what I had done last time. Nothing. Spock was gone and I sat there wondering what had happened. It felt different. It was definitely not the same feeling I got when it happened last time. I figured I must have done it wrong or something. I sat there dumbfounded, trying to remember what had happened the last time that may have been different. I couldn't figure out how to repeat it. I sat there thinking about it the rest of my shift. I couldn't get my mind off of it. Thereafter, I kept trying to change planes each time I received a come, but to no avail. I started to think that it was a simple fluke and that I wouldn't be able to repeat it when it finally happened again. It was about 2 months from when it happened originally when I finally broke through again. Although I had been attempting to do it at the close of every come with Spock, I was finally successful. It didn't take me by surprise this time, either, because I was more in tune with the mechanics of what was happening. Spock immediately picked up on what I had just done. Again, he asked if this was something I had done intentionally. This time I answered yes. Spock replied that it was an interesting turn of events and that he ignored it the first time because he felt it was an anomaly. Is this an unauthorized comm? I asked. There is no harm in communicating on this plane, he said nonchalantly. I was surprised by how effortlessly he had said that. Here I had been sweating out the fact that I might have been doing something wrong and he acted as if it was no big deal. How come you are coming so candidly on this plane and you don't during our normal comms? I asked. You have never given me reason, he replied. I stopped to think about this. It was true. I hadn't attempted to ask any questions or to communicate anything except what pertained to our regular comms. I had always assumed we were not to discuss anything else. My impression of Spock was one of being official, with no room for emotion. Even as we now communicated on this other plane, I still felt a sense of rigidity. Perhaps this was just how they were. Pressing forward with my curiosity, I asked whatever came to my mind first. Since I was thinking of how formal Spock sounded, I continued with that line of thought. Do you have feelings like humans? I asked bluntly. We are quite alike in our emotional makeup, 118, he said, referring to me as my PPD code number. We react to our surroundings, just as you do, but are much less impacted by what we sense. In the absence of markedly increased stimuli, emotion is not readily useful. Wow! I was constantly reminding myself I was actually having a conversation, of sorts, with an alien species. Up to this moment I hadn't internalized the meaning of it. Until now, I might as well have been receiving information from a computer somewhere on the other side of world. There was no meaning to it. Now I was actually communicating in such a manner that we could easily start talking about the Cowboys winning the Super Bowl if we wanted. It was quite a shift in perception for me. A million questions came to my mind. I managed to pick one and throw it out before I lost my new friend's attention span. Why did you think it was unintentional when I first commed with you on this plane? Note, water human is the closest I can come to an accurate translation of how Spock referred to humans. Other alternatives would be perhaps water vessel or water entity. Until now, we thought it impossible for a water human to sustain communication on this plane. But we are continually being surprised by other accessibilities as well. I realized by now that I had stopped typing our comms into my reporting window as soon as we had jumped to this other plane. I wasn't sure if I was supposed to continue or not. Am I supposed to report our comms while on this other plane? I asked, wanting the answer to be no so I could concentrate on what was being communicated. To my surprise, Spock said, "No, that is not necessary. Our communications are only being monitored through your reports so as to calculate an accuracy factor. Your communicating on this plane was never anticipated and therefore will never be known unless you discuss it with your chain of command. Will anyone get upset if they find out I have communicated with you on this other level?" I asked. I was still slightly paranoid about what rule I might be breaking, if any. I am unaware of your people's standards for this. However, we are not adverse to communicating with water humans on this plane. It is interesting to us that we are able to communicate with water humans as it is, but communicating on this plane creates even more interest. I sensed an underlying current of scientific interest in our communications that I had previously only sensed during our first few comms. I was thinking of this when Spock broke through my thoughts and said comms will cease and signed off. Just like that. I sat there, staring at my computer screen, thinking how amazing it was that I had just carried on a conversation with an alien species. I must have been in a daze because I had allowed my other job to go by me unnoticed. My crewmate jolted me out of my deep thoughts. "Are you okay, Dan?" my crewmate asked, obviously noticing I was in a daze. "I am okay, Brad, thanks," I answered. "Just a bit tired, that's all." I went on with my duties, but I couldn't stop thinking about my latest comm. I kept replaying it in my mind during the rest of the shift. I stayed awake most of the morning after my shift had ended. I just couldn't go to sleep. There were so many questions that I had to ask. Unfortunately, I was close to being relieved of duty in order to leave for my next assignment. I was anxious for my next comm to come so that I could get some answers to my other questions. My next comm never came at PPD Base Number 1. I was relieved of duty 2 weeks after that last comm. I felt so frustrated. I wasn't sure whether I would ever be communicating with Spock again. I didn't even know for sure whether or not I would be conducting PPD duties at my next base. I assumed that I would still be communicating with Spock if I did. It turns out that my fears were unfounded. I never communicated with Spock again, but my communications took on a whole new life at PPD Base Number 2. PPD Base Number 2, as was usually the case, my clearances had taken longer than myself to arrive at my next base. With the line of work I was in, if proof of your clearances weren't available, you were essentially out of work until they were. This was the case during my first few weeks at PPD Base Number 2. I took advantage of this unexpected downtime and visited some friends a short drive away. My unofficial vacation didn't last long. My clearances eventually arrived and I found myself being briefed on what I would be doing at my new duty location and how it related to the big picture. The contrast between my first PPD base and this one was enormous. At my first one, we had under 50 people all working to support a little site seemingly in the middle of nowhere. This one was an enormous place with thousands of people working under one roof. The overall differences were like night and day. But with respect to the PPD mission, things were identical. At first, I had been there for almost 3 months before I finally received a third-party introduction to my next PPD commander. It was late at night, during a 12-hour shift, and I was working at my station. I had just finished one of my routine tasks when I noticed two men approaching my workstation out of the corner of my eye. I immediately recognized one of the men as Captain Stanley, my PPD commander from PPD Base Number 1. I was quite surprised. I had never seen my first PPD commander, Captain White, again, so I never expected to see Captain Stanley again either. I got up and met their approach with a smile and a handshake. "Sergeant Sherman, great to see you again. How have you been doing here at your new base? Have you settled in nicely?" he asked. I couldn't help but wonder if the person he had with him was my new PPD commander. "Yes, sir, it's a great place. There's a lot more to do here than our last base," I joked. "How have you been? Can't complain. Actually, I am here for a little business and decided to come say hi. I also have someone I'd like you to meet. His name is Captain Gregory and he'll be your new program commander." Just like that, I looked around to see if anyone was within earshot. The closest person was almost 20 feet away and deeply involved in whatever they were doing. The ambient noise where we were standing was quite high. My quick assessment was that no one could hear what we were saying, but it didn't appear to be a concern for either of the two captains standing in front of me. "I see," I said, not knowing what else to say. I stood there dumbfounded, not knowing where to go with the conversation. Luckily, Captain Stanley kept the conversation going by asking me to explain what my job was and to give him a tour of my workstation. This made me feel more comfortable since it gave me something else to talk about while I assessed what to do or say next concerning PPD and my new commander. I finished showing both of my visitors around my workstation when Captain Stanley announced he needed to leave. He said his goodbyes and wished me luck in the future. Captain Gregory stayed behind. "So how long have you been involved with the program, Sergeant Sherman?" he asked as soon as Captain Stanley started walking away. "I went to school in the early part of 1992 and became mission ready around the beginning of November that same year." "How long have you been involved, sir?" I asked back. I was trying to get as much information as possible before he defined the terms of our relationship like all my other PPD commanders had. "Not very long," he answered, sounding as if he just started. "You'll be receiving COM soon. Let me show you how to access your reporting window." He went over to my computer monitor and sat in front of it. I could tell he didn't know anything about my regular job because he asked how to remove the screen that was currently taking up the entire monitor. I got rid of the screen for him. "You simply place the pointer on the background and press the right mouse button and F10 at the same time," he instructed. What he didn't know was that I had already checked the background to see if the window I would be using was there. It was there, but I didn't know my new password. I listened patiently for him to tell me my password. He told me my new password and then asked if I was all set. I told him that unless he had something else to tell me, I was ready. It was at this time that he gave me my medicine, as I came to call it. The pills came in the same shiny gray bottle they had come in at my previous space. He began to tell me what dosage I needed to take and I interrupted him. "I know, take two every day I come to work." "Actually," he said, "you only take one every day of work." "Oh," I said, feeling a bit embarrassed about my know-it-all attitude. "It has changed since my last base." "I guess so," he said. "I assume you know where to keep them?" "We didn't have the personal secure space here that we had access to at PPD base number one. I guess I'll have to keep it in my filing cabinet drawer." "That's fine," he said, probably knowing I had no other choice. Of course, there was no way I would be allowed to take them home. "If you ever have to reach me, send a message by email. I'll get back with you as soon as possible." He gave me his email address. It sounded like his office was located elsewhere. I was curious, so I asked, "Is your office here on site or somewhere else?" "You will see me around the building from time to time, but if you have any questions, confine them to email and I'll be sure to respond quickly. This position is such that you will not need much interaction with anyone. Just report your comms when they come in and go about your normal duties otherwise," the captain said, completely ignoring my question. This guy was slicker than I had thought. I was initially under the impression I could get out of him more information than I could my other PPD commanders. Evidently I was wrong. My life at PPD base number 2 was perhaps the loneliest I had experienced up to that point in my Air Force career. At PPD base number 1, I had managed to find a few friends that I could pass time with during my off-duty hours, and I had been involved with the base theater club putting on plays for the base populace. But I was increasingly withdrawing into a cocoon that was harder and harder to escape from. During the first few months, after I found out about PPD and my role in it, I went through feelings of superiority. I felt so much pride that I was one of the people given this interesting and, apparently, important ability. As time went by, though, all that seemed meaningless if I couldn't share it with someone. It's like being rich beyond your wildest imagination and being stuck on a deserted island without anyone to share it with or anywhere to spend it. I was becoming emotionally isolated and started to hate what I was doing. I compensated for the increasing loneliness I was feeling by spending money. I started to take solace in material things. I didn't feel like I had to hide what was going on in my life from things, so buying them comforted me. My first COM at PPD base number 2 came about 3 days after my impromptu meeting with Captains Stanley and Gregory. I showed up to work for a normal 12-hour midnight shift when I started to receive a preemptive message to prepare me for an incoming.